अभ्याम त्रिषु लोकेषु किञ्चन नानवाप्तम् अवाप्ताभ्याम् भारत एव च कर्मणि ओ सन् ऑफ प्रीता देयर इज नो वर्क प्रिस्क्राइब्ड फॉर मी विदिन ऑल द थ्री प्लैनेटरी सिस्टम्स नॉर एम आई इन वांट ऑफ एनीथिंग Nor have I need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in work. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Anyone here doesn't speak English? Nobody will be able to answer that question. Only Mataji? Kardama, you translate for Mataji. Huh? You'll translate for? As I'm speaking, you can do? Kardamaji, you surrendered, you get all credits. As if you have done. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in the Vedic literature as follows. The Supreme Lord is the controller of all other controllers, and He is the greatest of all diverse planetary leaders. Everyone is under His control. All entities are delegated with particular power only by the Supreme Lord. They are not supreme themselves. He is also worshipable by all demigods, and is the supreme director of all directors. Therefore, He is transcendental to all kinds of material leaders and controllers, and He is worshipable by all. There is no greater than Him, and He is the supreme cause of all causes. Yadi hyaham navarateyam jatu karaman yathandrita mama vart manu varatante manusya parata saravashaha. For if I did not engage in work, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In order to keep the balance of social tranquility for progress in spiritual life, there are traditional family usages meant for every civilized man. Although such rules and regulations are for the conditioned souls and not for Lord Krishna, because He descended to establish the principles of religion, He followed the prescribed rules. Otherwise, common man would follow in His footsteps because He is the greatest authority. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is understood that Lord Krishna was performing all the religious duties at home and out of home as required of a householder. For if I did not engage in work, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. This chapter of Bhagavad Gita is entitled Karma Yoga, Chapter 3. Karma Yoga means, in the highest sense, to link our consciousness to God through performing all of our work in a mood of devotion, as a sacrifice in the service of the Lord. Yadyaratat kamanon yatra lokomam karma bandhana taratam karma konteya mukta sangha samachara. That all work should be done as a sacrifice to Krishna, who is Yageshwar, the master of all sacrifices. And any work that is done for any purpose that is separated from Krishna, it is only a cause of bondage. Bondage under the influence of the three gunas, sattva-guna, raja-guna, and tamaguna. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna because in this age of Kali Yuga, Bhagavad Gita was spoken just prior to the coming of this age. He is taking the position of all of us, the common man, in the sense that he was family man with four wives. He had so many responsibilities in this world. And when he was in a condition of bewilderment, confusion, he wanted to give up his duties. And Krishna is preaching to him that you must perform your duties, you must be responsible, but you must do it in the right consciousness. You must do it with detachment from the desire towards sense gratification. And you must do it as in attachment to pleasing me. That is bhakti. And here Krishna is explaining that he is the Supreme Lord. He is already the proprietor of everything that exists. He is already the ultimate enjoyer of everything that exists. Is there any need for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to work? For what? Generally, we work because we need things to survive, or we need things for enjoyment that we do not have. We have to acquire, and we have to maintain and preserve, and therefore we work like so hard. Namam duskritinora mudha. Most people in this world, they work like asses. So hard. Just for little food. Just for a place to sleep at night. Just for a place to raise their families. Just for a little extra enjoyment, some extra facilities. But factually, even the animals, God has provided all these things for them, and they do not have to work so hard. But in human society, in order to survive, we have to work. And Krishna is explaining here that he doesn't have to work. He's already self-satisfied in himself, and he already has everything. But when he comes to this world, he engages in work. Why? Just to set the proper example for all other living beings. Krishna has nothing to attain, and he's lacking nothing. But yet we see, when he's living in Dwarka Dham, every morning he's rising at the time of the sounding of the rooster, which means before the sunrise during the Brahma Muhurta hour, and he begins to do sadhana. He practices meditation. And he works very hard. Meditation is work. It is not easy. Just like devotees, they chant their rounds every morning. It's actually hard work. People think devotees are lazy. But most materialistic people have them sit down for 2 hours to chant the holy name of the Lord. It's such hard work, they can't do it. They can go out and they can beat sledgehammers over concrete, or they can go out and they can carry big barrels of wheat and grain on their backs. And they could go to offices and they can go through all these crazy Bombay trains, and they can sit in office and be harassed by all sorts of competing companies and just be working day and night, investing and reinvesting and investing and reinvesting and managing and everything else. But you ask them to sit down with a mala and chant 16 rounds and concentrate in the holy names, they can't do it. It's too hard of work for them to control their minds. To sit and chant on your mala is not lazy, it is hard work. To meditate properly on Krishna is hard work. You have a lot of competition. Your mind is being tempted by every sort of desire. And you have to defeat all that competition by keeping your mind on Krishna. So Krishna would begin the day by meditating on himself. Because who else is there for him to meditate on? He's the Supreme. So he would start his day by working. And then he would go out and he would give in charity to the Brahmins. Whatever he had, he would use it generously for the benefit, not only of anybody, but for those who would use for the best cause. There's charity in the mode of goodness, charity in the mode of passion, and charity in the mode of ignorance, and there's charity in devotion to God. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, what is charity in the mode of ignorance? To give to the wrong person the wrong thing at the wrong time. Most charity these days is in the mode of ignorance. Somebody comes to your car and asks, give me some donation. You give them some donation. And they buy cigarettes with it, bidis. Or they buy some coffee. In America, people begging, panhandling, in the richest cities of America, they ask for donation. You give them donation, they go and buy a bottle of liquor. Wrong person, wrong time, wrong thing. How have you helped them? Or some people, they actually would work hard and be productive people in society, but because you give them donations, they remain lazy. So we have to know how to actually give in charity. The charity in the mode of passion is when we give, but we have a very fruit of desire in return. We want to become famous as being charitable. We're not really giving for the sake of helping that person. We're giving for the sake of helping our own false ego so that people think, oh, you are very liberal and generous and merciful and compassionate. Yes, of course. You see, my name is on this bus, I gave that money for that. And my name is on this building, I gave money for that. And my name is everywhere. Everyone is chanting my name. I am the provider. And charity in the mode of goodness is to give to the right person the right thing at the right time with no expectation of return. But transcendental, divine charity is when you give to those people who will use it for the ultimate benefit of humanity. To give prasad is divine charity. Because whoever you give it to, whether it's a hungry person or not a hungry person, you're giving that person the access to the spiritual world. Or to give to Brahmins who are disseminating the highest knowledge of spiritual consciousness and who are doing the highest welfare work for the body, mind, and soul of others. This is divine charity. And it is not done with ego. It is done with the real spirit of seva. So Krishna would give so many cows and so much wealth to the Brahmins, because in those days the Brahmins, they wouldn't keep anything for themselves. They would use everything for the welfare of everyone. And therefore there was no poverty. And after Krishna would perform so many wonderful duties like this, then he would go to Sudharma. Sudharma was the state house of Dwarka. And there he was Dwarkadish. He was the lord of Dwarka. He would make so many political decisions. He would guide all the statesmen and guide the citizens. He worked very hard. And here, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was accepting the work of a chariot driver. Do you know what hard work that is? We read of in the Mahabharata about Jayadratha. Jayadratha planned a terrible plot to kill the son of Arjuna, Abhimanyu. And he had so many Maharatis around. And Abhimanyu was surrounded. It was such a cheating activity, so unfair, so against all Kshatriya ethics. And ultimately Jayadrat killed Abhimanyu when he was unarmed and defenseless. And Arjuna was so simultaneously heartbroken and angry when he heard the news. That same day, he had just defeated the Trikarthas and others in another area of the battlefield. And when he came back, he was expecting all of his brothers to be praising him and to be joyous. But they couldn't even look at him, because they knew. They sent Abhimanyu into a form that nobody could get out of. And Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas knew that because of him, because of their foolishness, Abhimanyu had been killed. And when Arjuna heard the news, he was devastated. His own son. He vowed that if tomorrow by sunset I do not kill this Jayadratha, I will personally vow to enter into fire. So when the news of that vow came to the Kurus, they were very happy. All they had to do was protect Jayadratha, and Arjuna was killed. And without Arjuna, the Pandavas had no chance to win that war. So what they did is they put all of their lakhs and lakhs and lakhs of soldiers, millions of soldiers, they put them all in front of Jayadratha. Jayadratha was way, way, way miles and miles and miles behind. And around him was all the most powerful Maharatis to protect, just in case anybody got near him. It was impossible. And every soldier, their only duty that day was keep Arjuna away from Jayadratha. Now Krishna was the chariot driver. He had to drive that chariot through miles and miles and miles of solid Kuru soldiers who were willing to give their lives to somehow or other keep Arjuna away from Jayadratha. And Krishna began to drive those horses like nobody has ever driven horses before. He was just plowing through those soldiers, and Arjuna had to fight every one of them. At one point, Dronacharya, Arjuna knew he couldn't defeat him. Drona could not defeat Arjuna because he had already taught Arjuna everything he knew. But Arjuna could not defeat him either because he was his guru. So Drona challenged Arjuna, and Krishna told Arjuna, if you accept Drona's challenge, you'll be fighting with him for the rest of the day till sunset. And then you'll have to enter into fire. So even though a Kshatriya cannot refuse a challenge, you must refuse it. So Arjuna shot an arrow that fell right just at the feet of Drona. And then he just had Krishna just shoot his chariot just by Drona. And he offered his obeisances and said, "I offer obeisances to you." And then he was gone. And what are you doing? You are running from battle. In this way, they were fighting so hard that a little over halfway through the day, the horses were so exhausted that Arjuna had to get off the chariot and just fighting on the ground. Everybody in the Kuru army was simply against Arjuna that day. And meanwhile, Krishna had to bring the horses to water and feed them water. And then he had to brush them down and give them nice relaxation and then bring them back and connect them to the chariot, and again he had to take them through the military phalanxes. And just as the sun was about to set, Jayadrata was barely on the horizon where Arjuna could just see his form surrounded by all these other great Kurus who were not about to allow Arjuna anywhere near him. At that time, Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra to cover the sun. So everyone thought, the sun has set. And the Kurus began to celebrate. They all put down their weapons and began to dance. Harivo! They didn't say Harivo, but they were very happy. Very, very happy. Arjuna has to enter fire. The sun has set and Jayadrata is alive. And Jayadrata was so relieved. He was just celebrating. And during this wonderful, wonderful celebration, festivity of victory, Krishna told Arjuna, "Now you take your crescent-shaped arrow and you sever the head of Jayadrata. But do not let it fall to the ground. Send another astra to send his head to where his father is doing tapasya in the Himalayas." Because Jayadrata has been given a benediction by his father that whoever makes his head fall to the ground, that person's head will crack into 1,000 pieces. So while everyone was engaged in this wonderful celebration that we have won the war because Arjuna's dead, Arjuna, nobody could believe what they saw. Arjuna took an arrow and chopped off Jayadrata's head and sent it flying to the mountains. And his father was sitting in samadhi, and all of a sudden his bloody head landed on his legs, and he just looked down and just saw this bloody head, and he just pushed it off. And when it fell to the ground, his father's head cracked into 1,000 pieces and he died. Everyone was looking, "Arjuna, how could you do this? The sun's already set and you've killed him." They were dumbfounded. And just as they were looking at Arjuna in this condition of amazement, "Arjuna, it's impossible for you to break Kshatriya principles like this." Just at that time, Krishna removed his Sudarshan Chakra from the sun, and the sun was shining, and everyone looked, "Where did that come from?" And within a second, the sun set. And everyone, this is what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, success, failure, honor, dishonor, victory, defeat, they are all dualities. To the extent that you're happy when you're victorious, you lament when you fail. Huh? That is the nature of the dualities of material life. We had become attached to something, but when it changes to the degree we're blissful, we become miserable. But anyways, through this story we find, how hard Krishna was working. The fact is, Krishna didn't have to do all that work. Krishna could have destroyed Jayadratha in a second. But he did that work just to show that when he's on earth, he works hard. He was a responsible householder. Huh. He had 16,108 wives. I haven't seen a man alive yet who can satisfy one wife. And he had all 16,108 wives completely satisfied. That's Krishna. And he was maintaining beautiful palaces. He was doing so much seva, so much work, so much everything. He was setting the example of how every human being should follow in his footsteps. In the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan, there is no work, there is only play. But in this material world, you must work. And even Krishna, when he comes to this world, he works. But his work is transcendental. Even when he was in Vrindavan, he would go out every morning with his little stick and he would herd those cows. He would bring them to the nice pastures. He would bring them back. He would milk them. No, he was doing the work of a Vaishya in Vrindavan. He was doing the work of a Chachi in Dwarka in Mathura. And here he's saying that there's no need for me to work. I'm Atmarama. I'm perfect and complete in myself. But if I cease to work, then all the world will follow what I do, and they will all be lazy. They will not be responsible. They will not be charitable. Therefore, I must set the proper example for all. Yad yad acharati sreshtas tad tad evete rojana sa yat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. Krishna says, whatever action is performed by great men, common men will follow in his footsteps. Whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Even great kings like Janak and others have attained the perfectional stage by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Our Guru Maharaj very, very strongly stated that Krishna consciousness is not for anyone who is lazy. Krishna consciousness is for those who really, seriously want to work hard. And what does it mean to work hard? If you want to be a brahmachari, you work all day. You rise early in the morning. You scrub that temple floor. You go and you chant your rounds with intense determination. And you dance before the deities at Mangal Arati. And you scrutinizingly hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then whatever your chores are, you must work all day. You cook, or you go out and distribute books, or you go out and preach, or you do puja. But you have to work. And any lazy man, Prabhupada said, kick him out. He cannot live in our temples. He will ruin the dignity of our whole mission if you have one lazy man living in our temples. Our temples are only for those who are willing to work hard and surrender all day long. The people living outside, the grihasthas, they shouldn't think that our temple are for lazy men. They should see that these devotees are working harder and performing more sacrifices than any of us. We're grihasthas because we can't do what they're doing. That should be the standard of the consciousness of the brahmacharis and the sannyasis. That they're day and night doing selfless seva for humanity without expecting anything in return. Just giving, giving, giving. That is the standard of brahmacharya. That is the standard of real sannyas. Not just begging for alms. Begging for service. And what is the standard of grihasthas in Krishna consciousness? They cannot be lazy. They must be responsible and they must work hard. Whatever they're doing, they must do it with their full attention, concentration, and all of their determination. If you are a student, you must study hard. If you are doing some work, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a businessman, whether you're an engineer, whatever you may be, you must do it, and you must do it with full concentration and determination. You cannot be lazy. Because if you're a devotee, whatever you do, you're representing Krishna. And Krishna himself, in his occupations, he did them so carefully. And if we're representing him, we must also do like that. Srila Prabhupada told us that you make advancement in Krishna consciousness according to how much responsibility you are willing to accept on behalf of Krishna and the spiritual master. But whether we're student, whether we're businessman, whether we're father or mother, we may work very, very hard and very conscientiously, but we do it different than the mudhas, than the foolish materialists. We should work harder for them. We should work harder than them. Not less than them because we're devotees. But what is our goal? What is our purpose? Our purpose is to utilize whatever we have done in the service of Krishna, to set a proper example for people to follow of Krishna consciousness. And that means work without sadhana. Hard work as a grihastha without sadhana, without satsang, is mudha life. It is like a materialistic ass foaming at the mouth. But when we work hard in our sadhana each morning and we have proper satsang, then when we perform our worldly responsibilities with great determination, it is all connected to Krishna. We set a proper example for others what the dignity of Krishna's devotee really is. Krishna says you cannot survive without working in this world. But work must be done in a mood of service, in a mood of sacrifice, in a mood of love. And if you're doing your studies for Krishna out of love, then how much should you study? How bogus it is if you don't. You should give up your studies if you're not willing to do it well for Krishna. You should give up your family if you're not willing to be responsible to do it well for Krishna, because it's all a waste. But a devotee of Krishna is meticulous, conscientious, and first class in anything he does. Srila Rupa Goswami has said that what does devotional service mean? That even the most ordinary thing that you do it with the greatest care, the greatest attention, for the pleasure of Krishna. Yukta Vairagya means renunciation doesn't indicate that we give up our responsibilities, that we give up even the facilities that God has given us, but we use them all for divine seva and devotional service. That is Krishna consciousness. And Krishna, he comes to this world to perform so much work like an ordinary human being just to show us, don't be lazy. If you are a grihastha, you must be a first-class responsible grihastha. If you are a brahmachari or a sannyasi, you be a first-class responsible brahmachari or sannyasi. Human life is meant for seva. And seva means sacrifice. And sacrifice means with great attention and care, whatever we do, we give our life to do it right and nicely for Krishna. And of course, this consciousness, Krishna explains, can only come about when we regularly hear from either Krishna directly, like Arjuna, or from Krishna's divine representatives who are giving us proper guidance. Because you see, this material world, it is so much a dangerous place that at every step Maya is trying to capture our consciousness and take it away from the goal of life. Maya wants us to just work hard for our own material purposes, or she wants us to become lazy. Either one is incompatible with Krishna's service. When we become frustrated with our endeavors, we want to give up. When we become successful in our endeavors, we become so intoxicated and infatuated that we just get so carried away, we just want to give our life to get more, 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 and we forget Krishna. So whether you're a success or failure, Maya is waiting right there to take our mind away from Krishna consciousness. And it is a fact. It is so difficult to stay in that spirit of seva for God throughout our life. The only possibility is if we have regular satsang, if we have regular association with sadhus, with devotees, who keep reminding us, who keep our mind on the right track. Yes, do your work for Krishna. Yes, keep your sadhana pure for Krishna. So important. Krishna's chastising Arjuna. You're a responsible householder. You're a kshatriya. Don't be lazy. Do your work, but do it for me. And as Krishna's representatives, this is our duty to guide people in this way. You are a student. Don't be a lazy nonsense. You study right for Krishna. Huh? Yat karoshi rasnasi yajdohoshi dadasi yat yathapasyasi gaunte yathat kurushu madharapanam. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, all sacrifices you may perform, Krishna says, do it as an offering to me. And if you're doing it as an offering to Krishna, do you do it with half of a heart? Krishna says, all that you do must be done as an offering to Krishna. And if you're doing it as an offering to Krishna, you must do it well. You must do it the best you possibly can, whatever it may be. That is Krishna consciousness. That is renunciation. Adibo, is there any questions? The purest understanding of karma yoga is bhakti yoga. The ordinary understanding of karma yoga is work with the desire for fruitive results. But the purest and highest understanding of karma yoga is pure devotional service. We have to understand what is the best way we can serve Krishna. We should try to utilize as much time as possible we're helping to propagate Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, if we're lazy in the material sense, then no one will take us serious when we try to propagate Krishna consciousness. You understand? The grihastha is a respectable person who's really performing his responsibilities properly, then when he speaks, people will listen. They must see that he's responsible, that he's doing things properly, that he's utilizing his energies at every moment for the best purpose. If he's doing his work, he's doing it right. He's not spaced out. Huh? When Srila Prabhupada was a grihastha, he worked very hard. He was very conscientious. But he was very regularly having kirtan and associating with his god brothers. But still, he was very responsible. He had wife and 5 children. He did not neglect any of his activities, either spiritual or worldly. Because our worldly activities, when they are done in the right consciousness, they become non-different than our sadhana. If our sadhana is strong and our so-called worldly activities are performed in the right consciousness, they merge into one. It all becomes seva. That is why we need spiritual direction. We need advanced Vaishnavas, we need Guru to give us direction. Without that, it becomes very difficult for us to discriminate. We easily get carried away. I need more money, 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 more money. And pretty soon, Krishna's disappeared. He's forgotten. We are not greedy. We're not greedy for anything material. We simply are aspiring to be the servant of the servant of the servant through whatever we do.
How to make people understand this point? How to make people understand this point so that they follow?
By us following, when we follow, they will take seriously what we say. Whatever you speak will only convince people to the extent they see that you're doing it. Whatever you do, you will be influencing the lives of so many. And if we're acting in this devotional consciousness, the spirit of real renunciation, and we're speaking the same thing, or we're assisting those people who are speaking the same thing, or we are bringing our friends, relatives, colleagues, to hear from people who are speaking the truth, that is the best way we can help people. That we forget. But with good sadhana, good satsang, and the common understanding in the back of our mind that the fruits are going to go to Krishna, gradually we become Krishna conscious. And if you are doing it with the blessings of the elevated Vaishnava personalities, then it becomes seva. Then even if you're not conscious of it, still it's considered to be seva, because it's under proper authority. Just like one devotee, he was put in charge of a construction project, and he was so busy counting money and making sure people don't cheat him that he said to Gurudev, "I can't think of Krishna when I'm doing this." He said, "But because you're doing it under my instruction, it's the same. Even if you forget Krishna, because you're doing it under my instruction, Krishna is accepting it as devotional service." Both. You must take the general instructions, chant 16 rounds every day, follow the four regulative principles, install the deity within your home, worship him nicely, do your work, follow the four regulative principles nicely, do your work, offer to what extent is possible the fruits of your work for the welfare of others in Krishna's service. Those are general instructions you must follow. Specifically, we should have blessings before we impart on anything important in our life. Without getting the blessings of great souls, nothing in our life has any meaning. A devotee will never embark on any important venture without receiving blessings from the Lord's devotees. And receiving blessings doesn't mean demanding, "I'm going to do this, give me your blessings. I'll give you a donation in return, you give me blessings." No, we should actually say, "How can I serve? Would you like me to serve like this?" Blessings have to come from the heart for them to be potent. Not just blessings that are given because you're going to do it anyway, so... just to get you out of my room, I'll give you my blessings. Those type of blessings are not very powerful. But we should attract the blessing of the heart by really saying, "Will this please you? If it does, I will do it." Those blessings is what we should be seeking before we do anything important in our life. Are there any other questions? So today is Mr. Dalal's birthday. Arrivo. About 1 month back, he came to my room to reserve that on this day, all the devotees would be here. No. We are very proud to be here today because Mr. Dalal is a very fortunate man. He has two beautiful sons who are both such wonderful and sincere devotees of the Lord. And according to the Vedic philosophy, the purpose of marriage is to bring Krishna-conscious children into the world. Are you translating? Why you're so lazy? not doing her work. She's listening to the lecture, and simultaneous to listening, she's disobeying everything I'm saying. So, according to the Shastra, the first responsibility of household life is to bring Krishna-conscious children into this world and to raise them to become pure devotees of the Lord. The scriptures really doesn't say anything important about raising children who are going to make a lot of money, who are going to make your family famous. The scripture says the most important duty of a parent is to raise children in such a way that they never have to take birth again in this material world, that they become pure devotees of the Lord. Of course, as we were explaining through today's discussion, to become a pure devotee of the Lord means the children have to, according to the ashram they choose, be very responsible. But they dedicate in Krishna's service. So Dwarkadish and Sridhama are two young men who are born in a generation where even here in India, practically all young people are becoming very degraded, are becoming very, very, very materialistic, who are just enjoying all sorts of Western forms of entertainment, television, all sorts of sports, intoxications, gambling. How rare it is. One out of manushyanam sahasre sukashchid yatati siddhaye, one out of hundreds and thousands of the youth of this world, even India, even considers to seriously take to spiritual life. And if the son becomes a pure devotee, or even the daughter becomes a pure devotee, then 10 generations of all relatives are liberated, past and future. Because Prahlad was a pure devotee of the Lord, Hiranyakashipu and all of his ancestors were liberated by Prahlad's seva. There is no greater fortune than to have a child that is a devotee. In fact, it is said that it is explained that a son that's not a devotee is as good as urine. Because for a father, both the son and urine ultimately come from the same place, right? A son who doesn't become a devotee is as good as urine. He may as well have just passed urine that day. It's blunt, but it's what the Shastra says. How much urine is flowing through the streets these days? To find an actual human being who's civilized, who's becoming a devotee of the Lord in this generation is so rare. And here we find Sridhama, Dwarkadish. They are both completely dedicated, committed servants of God in their life. And they're setting a very nice example. One is a doctor. One is now studying quite hard. They're setting good examples in their own profession. They're chanting 16 rounds of the name every day. They're completely dedicated to their spiritual master. They're completely dedicated to the welfare of humanity in God's service. How rare. This is to be considered the perfection of one's grihastha ashram, when they create children who are sincere and pure devotees of the Lord. So Mr. and Mrs. Dalal, they have, by Krishna's grace, achieved the perfection of their Grihastha ashram by bringing forth two such wonderful devotees. And for this, Krishna is very pleased. And now the two sons, their great desire is that you also become a pure devotee of Krishna. That is their love. Prahlad's love for, of course, you're not Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad's love for Hiranyakashipu was to make him a pure devotee. You are a very pious man, but still, they're not content with you being a pious man. They want you to be a pure devotee. That is their love, and that is the perfection of our life. So, in this sense, we can understand that today, being your birthday, is an auspicious day, because your birth into this world has been successful by giving birth to two such wonderful devotees of the Lord, and also by your own example of trying to assist in this wonderful movement of our Guru Maharaj. So we are very proud of you, and we request all the devotees assembled to give your heartfelt and loving blessings, that on this day Krishna's kindness and mercy always is bestowed upon him in every aspect of his life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. At this time, we would like to invite all of you to chant the holy names of Krishna.